numbers told the story they always do.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. We have screens on in the studio here. There's this Houston Oilers-Buffalo Bills game that's taking place. Jeff, it's right now. It's live. And Houston is murdering the Bills. I want the Bills on the money line. Will you book that bet for me? No?
I'm going to steer clear.
Okay. Just curious if I could rope you into that. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This was Captain Jack before the show. He said, I'll be on with Gil. Tune in. I showered for this. I appreciate that. This is from Jeff Kuykendall. Gil, the wife and I watched Action last night on Showtime and enjoyed it immensely. When will Vegas Dave be on the Megapod? Enjoy your day. Man, I hope you're kidding. J-Rod, what would you... Oh, this was when Captain Jack was on. Sorry, I missed this. He said, what would you say on same-game parlays if you're given a boost, though? I've been getting pretty big same-game parlay boosts. I mean, my quick response to that, J-Rod, is the books know the math, and even the boosts sometimes don't get you to where you should be. Just point that out. But again, I'm okay with it if you're as a bettor, if you're just in it for entertainment and you want to do it and you know you're getting the worst of it, but you just like the option of doing it, I'm not going to argue with it. You're free to do whatever you want to do, and some people are just in it for that. Jesse Welch, what an excellent and informative breakdown by the captain. Hey, Gil, someday I'd love to have a discussion on how eliminating the shift next year, well, this has changed it up, will affect betting and making MLB totals. I'm super interested in finding angles in the future. Maybe we could ask Jason Weingarten about that momentarily. Adam Orphan, there are worse choices one can make than follow the dead around Europe. That choice is very high EV, if you ask me. Talking about Jeff Stoneback from MGM, what he's going to do in his retirement. Cricket Man, Meaty Middle here. Talking about our discussion with Captain Jack. He said, I will always be betting somewhere. About our talk with Josh Towers, Mike Ross. Harris, 25-1 was a steal. NL Rookie of the Year. I would have never bet it if it wasn't for you guys. All shout out to Jason Weingarten, who's about to join us on that. Will, that Pepsi guy. No love for Max Fried for NL Cy Young, 65-1. He didn't get any love on that segment. Doug Wedge, love what I'm hearing from Josh on Sandy Alcantara for NL Cy Young. Grabbed him last month at plus 550. It's looking good. Web 12-66, always with Warner retweets. Sports gambling is not entertainment. You want to be entertained? Go to a movie. I'm with you, Web 12-66. Jason said he's jumping on with us here momentarily. And then Scotty B, 726, saying that, yes, fewest wins in the NFL is available in Nevada. He says he had it last year at Circa on Jacksonville. Jason Weingarten, ladies and gentlemen, the host of the Wide World of Weingarten, joins us now, as promised, at Spreadopedia, wearing a very festive shirt. How you doing, Jason?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Doing very well. What about that tweet we just got? Are you able to quantify what the absence of a shift will do totals-wise?
Haven't even looked. Got to get through this season before I start dealing with next season.
Do you think you might be able to somehow quantify or exploit an edge with that?
If I can, do you mean if I can quantify it?
In other words, the question was, yeah, how do you think that will change things?
I'm sure there are very smart people at Fangraphs and other publications that will do far more deep diving into this than I care to. But will I find a way to exploit it? Yeah, I mean, find a way to exploit all sorts of things. I'm sure this will just be another tool in the tool chest.
I'm a professional exploiter, Jason Weingarten.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, here's
is this first time listening to me? No.
That was my question, that is. All right, here it is, AL stat comparison. Let's do a little blind resume. This is the month of, this is since May 1st. So we're talking essentially two-thirds of the Major League Baseball season to date. The months of May and June and the early part of July. This is going into yesterday, just to be clear. Player one, player two, player three, player four. I won't read off all the stats to everybody because not everybody is watching here. Or a lot of people are watching, but for those listening, essentially you have four players, AL stat comparison blind resume, where, you know, give or take a few things on each of these. We're talking hits, runs, homers, RBI, stolen base, walk rate, K rate, and then their slash plus WRC plus. Essentially, you have, I don't know, maybe player three is above the fray there, Jason, would you say? Reveal to us who these players are.
Well, player one is Aaron Judge. The 23 home runs, I think, give that away. He's having a fantastic season all around. You know, could kind of, he has a couple holes in his game, the strikeout rate, little thing to highlight, but he's doing pretty great.
Batting average horrible.
Player two.
Batting average horrible the last 30 days.
Yeah, that's also, but it's batting average. I care about batting average the least.
Yeah.
Player two is Julio Rodriguez. So I guess if you throw out his first month of the season, he has been not only great, he's been pretty elite, actually.
It is really comparable to Judge since May 1st. It really is, with the exception of the homers, right?
Yeah, the exception of the home runs. And that's the thing is, I expected Julio Rodriguez to be good. I expected him to be a superstar. I did not expect him to, jump into this tier of player this quickly. So pretty impressive to watch. I'm enjoying it. Player three is Yordan Alvarez, who, again, when you exclude the home runs, it's hard to say these numbers aren't better than Aaron Judge, player number one.
In fact.
And then player number four is Shohei Ohtani, yep, who's putting up those numbers as a hitter. I guess since May 1st, he's been pretty good. I don't know how you say a starting pitcher with a 151 WRC plus is bad in any way.
So that's the thing about this. It's like if you were just looking at it again from May 1st, Yordan Alvarez. Oh, thank you, guys. Very nice graphic add-on right there. Yordan Alvarez, the slash, the WRC plus, like he's clearly the dude, right? His K rate is better than the rest of them. His walk rate is better than the rest of them. It's just the home runs, essentially. Well, he runs. He's also lower in than Judge as well, but the home runs account for so many of those. And then the Shohei thing is right. It's like, okay, those are just half of his stats. So your point being in all of this, there's no chance Aaron Judge should be the short shot to win AL MVP, right? And would you take a flyer on Yordan in double digits right now?
If you could still get double digits on Yordan, I would absolutely take a flyer on it. If you have FanDuel and you could parlay Yordan with something you're confident in, I would take a look at that. I did Yordan MVP Shohei Ohtani Cy Young yesterday. That paid 101-1. It's a little lower now, but 101-1 is always a nice little flyer to have. But in general, I think some of these market numbers are just so bad. Like, there's no world where Aaron Judge is an even money favorite right now. There just isn't. That's what we've been calling the pinstripe premium. And I guess the only way I can consider making Judge as a favorite that high is if you have a huge amount of liability on him. But some of this bookmaking on these awards markets is so bad, like I might just have to make the odds myself next year for a book.
You just might have to. I don't know.
That
could happen.
It's trending in that direction at this point. So,
care to share anything, or you just want to leave it at that?
If you're going to keep putting up odds that are this bad in season, then people should be piling into everybody but Judge right now. I'm not saying Judge isn't going to win. It is possible he wins, but
just shouldn't be
making
that
him an even money favorite right now is just insane.
That's insane. Yeah, I know. I agree with that. Do you care to share anything more about the bookmaker stuff, or you just want to leave it at that? We'll leave that
no,
hanging?
No, I'm just, okay. The markets are so dislocated and disjointed on futures that there's opportunities for me to do other things. I'm probably going to have to seriously consider it.
I like it. Jason Weingarten, everybody. Big future ahead. All right, what did you bet in baseball today? What have you bet so far?
So I got a first inning. I got a couple first innings, actually. I'm still trying to play these as the market's open. Just got logged out of bookmaker while I was doing this. Very annoying. Got the Guardians this morning. I'm still getting the new name down, but Guardians Tigers, that game's early. It's a 1:10 Eastern game. Got even money on the yes there. That's one of my favorite first innings of the day. Later on in the day, I'm waiting for the Royals Astros first inning to kind of populated a bunch more places. I'm going to play that at even money. And then Angels Marlins, going to play that first inning. Hopefully I'm going to get plus 115, probably even a little higher. Plus 120 wouldn't surprise me with Ohtani on the mound there. But I am going to play the first inning yes score in that game, and I'm going to hope that Ohtani gets three strikeouts.
And you're going to hope that he gets three strikeouts.
Yeah, I hope I lose that bet.
Okay.
But in the event that I don't, you know, I'm going to make some money off that first inning.
For those who missed that, so Jason will have conflict with his daily bet versus his season-long interest, and so it's going to be one of those days of that kind of bet. But you have already bet the Guardians, yes, first inning, and you are looking to have them post for both the Royals games and the Angels games.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm going to bet the Baltimore Orioles again. O is minus 105. You see that stat I sent you?
The first team ever. Was it Stats by Stats that they put this out? Stats by Stats. First team ever, the Orioles, in MLB history to allow a game-tying or go-ahead homer in the 7th, 8th, and 9th, and yet still win the game, which is what they did yesterday with the Orioles' 10-9 win over the Rangers. Two teams that have been great surprises in Major League Baseball this year. It's an amazing stat. So you're on the Orioles again? You've already bet them today?
Yeah, I bet them. Bet minus 110, actually. You can get minus 105 now. So did not get the best number there, actually.
Okay, anything else besides those, the three first innings in that one?
Still looking, trying to see what I got in the could get in the Angels Marlins game. You know, obviously I want to figure out something to do with Otani every time he's pitching, but still going through the card mostly today. That's okay. What I got. You see these Mitch White minus 322. That's a huge number for Dodger pitchers. Guess we're seeing those big numbers coming back on random guys.
Here they come, random Dodgers pitchers for north of 300. Alex, Jason, thank you as always. Wide World of Wine Garden. Wherever podcasts are distributed, we appreciate it, man.
Thank you. New episode should be out later today.
Later today. How's that? Thank you, Jason. Coming back, Brady Cannon in studio. More NFL as well. Numbers Game, VEASAN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VEASAN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on The Numbers Game, live from the South Point Hotel Casino, tip of the strip, South Point. It's Gil Alexander. Jeff Parlay is here as well. Jeff, Hayward Jeffries just scored for the Oilers. You sure? I'll take the Bills on the money line. They're down like 28 now or something. No? You want no part of it? Here's the thing that you forget about these games. By the way, of course, this was January of 1993. They're showing the most famous comeback in NFL playoff history, where the Oilers went up 31-3 early second half on the Buffalo Bills. Bills came all the way back to win it on their way to another Super Bowl appearance. Frank Reich game. By the way, Frank Reich authoring the greatest comebacks in both pro and college history. Oh, here was the pick six for the Oilers. I think that made it 31-3. But one of the things that when they show these old broadcasts that you forget, they didn't have the score up at all times. So you're just kind of guessing at all times until they flash it up like going into commercial. Who was the first dude finally was like, we probably should have the score up at all times. There's no reason we shouldn't. But what a negative to those broadcasts back then. Bubba McDowell, 58-yard pick. Pick six. You don't want my Bills bet. All right, Jeff. What else you got, NFL? Let me guess. Most regular season wins?
Yes. Bills favored. No shock there. 5-1. Tampa plus 550. Green Bay. How about the Packers? Still at 7-1 here.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Rams plus 750. Kansas City and the Chargers both at 8-1. Everyone else north of 10-1. Actually, everyone else is north of 15-1 at BetMGM, Gil.
Okay, so if you go to the season win totals this year, again, the teams... I'm sorry?
Oh, sorry.
What just happened? Oh, you were talking to somebody else. Season win totals. Buccaneers and Bills, right? Essentially, at the top of regular season win totals markets. And so, therefore, makes sense that this market at BetMGM, team with the most regular season wins, would have the Bills at 5-1 and the Bucks at plus 550. The Packers would be next, 7-1 on the Packers. So it does follow suit as, you know, as it should to regular season wins. There should be correlation. Now, we do have a couple logos that are wrong there. Or a few, so we won't put those up on screen. But I think here, if you look at these, it's tough to pick an AFC West team, no matter how bullish you are on them, because they got to play each other, and that obviously is built into the market as well. But if you're taking a flyer on anybody, I don't know. It's tough to bet against a team like the Bucks. because the Bucs just play in that division. Are you? Let me ask you this. What's your opinion of the New Orleans Saints this year? If you don't think the Saints are going to be any good, it's kind of the Bucs or bust in that market, because then they will have six, if you feel that way about the Saints, six easier games, you could argue, than any other team in football in division. Is that a fair statement based on their talent?
Here's the one problem, though. Since Brady's gotten down there, the Saints have owned them in the regular season for whatever reason.
For whatever reason.
One of the weirder anomalies over the last 2 years. If you're going to make, again, I don't love betting the short shots in these type of markets, Gil, because
I don't either.
All it takes is one injury and you can have a real problem, obviously. And God forbid something happens to Brady and then you're dealing with a team that might be lucky to win nine games if Brady's not there. So I can tell you this. I don't want anything to do with Green Bay. Even though they have had the most regular season wins the last 2 years, it's going to be very hard for them to replicate it again with no Devontae Adams there and probably a slower start than usual. You can't take Kansas City or the Chargers, who are two of the shorter shots, because that division is just so ridiculously tough that it's going to be hard to win more than 11 or 12 games there.
Where are the Colts? What was the Colts number?
Indy was 20-1.
I think that's the bet.
I'm way lower on them than I think everybody else is.
What's wrong with you?
I think them and the Titans are essentially the same.
Ooh.
I don't like Matt Ryan. I don't think Matt Ryan, you're in a point where Wentz was so bad last year that I think we have overcompensated for Ryan being better than Wentz. I'm not certain of that. I'm really not at this point of Ryan's career.
We disagree big on that. You may prove to be right, but I just think that the Colts are, I think Matt Ryan is chronically underrated. And by that, I mean that people think he's terrible and he's not, just hasn't been surrounded. I'm not saying he's great, but he's not as bad as people think he is. And now surrounded by players everywhere, I think that Colts team is going to be a Super Bowl contender. And I think the Titans, as great as I thought they were last year, I think they've fallen off a cliff this year. I think there's so many questions at wideout. We'll see what Derrick Henry is. Derrick Henry could be great after the injury or not. And then Ryan Tannehill's Ryan Tannehill. And the Colts D, they got players, man. Anchored by Darius Leonard. I don't know. Speaking of the Colts, let's go to most rushing yards. Last year, Jonathan Taylor led the NFL in rushing yards. I don't think I was quite aware as to the margin that he led the NFL in rushing yards. He had 1,811 regular season rushing yards last year. Nick Chubb was second with 1,259. Wow. Almost a 600-yard margin. Jonathan Taylor. And he's 4-1. The aforementioned Derrick Henry, since we're talking Colts and Titans, he's 5-1. Dalvin Cook plus 750. There's Nick Chubb at 8-1. Everybody else starting with Najee, double digits. All right, first of all, get Antonio Gibson out of there. That's the worst bet on the board, 16-1. That's not happening. Like, why is Antonio Gibson 16-1? Really? Like Carson Wentz, they're gonna so take the ball out of Carson Wentz's hand that they're gonna give Antonio Gibson the ball over and over in DC. I do not see that happening. That gets my vote for worst bet, especially just at 16-1. Who's betting that?
There are a bunch of numbers here that.
How about Zeke? Zeke falling to 22-1?
You have a legitimate argument to be made that Tony Pollard's a better running back there.
Yeah. Oh, we've said that for 2 years.
Plenty of argument at that point. But the problem is again if. This is the year where Zeke probably gets cut after the season if he doesn't have a good year. Gil, this is one of the rare markets where you can only look to the shorter shots here because it's going to be very hard for anyone down the board in order to realistically have a real run at this. Javonte Williams could very easily be splitting too many carries with Melvin Gordon, so forget that. Antonio Gibson, no way. Can't do that. How can you trust a San Francisco 49er running back in any sort of market?
No.
You just can't.
No.
It's possible Deebo Samuel could end up being the leading rusher again for San Francisco. So it's just too hard of a market to take a longer shot on.
Joe Mixon finished just for last year's numbers after Taylor, almost a 600-yard lead over Nick Chubb. Then right after Chubb, it was Joe Mixon, Najee Harris, Dalvin Cook.
Okay.
And then Antonio Gibson, who just cleared 1,000 yards. But at that point, you're talking like barely half the yards that Taylor got.
Yeah, it's just it's really difficult to go down the board here. If Kareem Hunt was not in Cleveland, Nick Chubb would be the bet by a pretty wide margin here, because assuming that Deshaun Watson is gone for a minimum of a half a season and maybe longer, Cleveland's going to have to go full ground and pound here, because Brissett's just not reliable enough to put the ball in his hands a lot. And they have a great offensive line, as we know. And Chubb is still an elite running back when he's healthy. So
this is
that would be the bet for me. I wish I was getting a little more, but that would be the bet for me.
The other big thing you want to look at here is opportunities, right? Carries. And remember, I can't remember who, I want to give full credit for who put this out, so I apologize for not remembering, but there was someone who said, there's a magic number for number of carries the previous year where you just fall off a cliff. Like, I think it was like 375 or something like that. Maybe I'm too high on carries. Maybe, but it was north of 300. But last year, Jonathan Taylor, 332 attempts, led the NFL, followed by, I would not have guessed this, Najee Harris at 307. I would not have guessed that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got that either.
So that's, you know, again, do you believe in wear and tear? Do you believe in wear and tear at such a young age like Najee? I don't know that I do, but Jonathan Taylor certainly logging, you know, he's logged a lot of carries, and he catches the ball at the backfield. That's a tough market. I don't think I would have a bet in this, quite frankly. I don't think I would. I would not have a season long bet in this, but if I did, the Nick Chubb option at 8-1, probably for some of the reasons you state, Jeff, is tempting.
I think that's what you have to look at here. Yeah. Because remember last year, even though Taylor ended up way ahead of the field, Derrick Henry doesn't get hurt.
Oh.
There's a whole different game here. Like, Derrick Henry was going to win the rushing title and was going to be the offensive player of the year before he got hurt last year.
If you are bullish on the Titans like you appear to be, then
I'm bearish on the Colts more than bullish on the Titans.
Okay, but if you are bullish on the Titans, Derrick Henry has to be your choice, right? Because Derrick Henry, even playing field, is probably the best pure rusher, period. I don't think you'd get much argument on that. But if you're not bullish on, if you're bearish on the Titans, and they're going to be behind in games, you can't bet Derrick Henry as good as he is. It's like at some point, you got to throw the rock. So that really has to be correlated to your Titans handicap. All very interesting, all very bettable. Rafa Nadal has an injury. Good boy. Brady Cannon in studio next on Golf. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The VSiN Summer Special is here. For only $19, you get everything VSiN has to offer from now to the end of July. Sign up today, and you'll get VSiN's daily best bets, including Adam Burke's daily MLB best bets, NFL preseason coverage, premium articles on golf, UFC, USFL, and NASCAR. If you want the full VSiN experience, and I know you do, which features a daily Best Bets email, every edition of Point Spread Weekly, use of our betting tools, and a live video stream whenever you want it. The cost is only $19 to be a subscriber through July 31st. Sign up now at VSiN.com/summer. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from J&J Watering Hole. Keep preaching for my Colts, Gil. Blasphemous Jeffrey. Angry emoji. LOL. Mad at you, Jeff. We love J&J Watering Hole. Let's see. Scotty B says, not saying I like it, but aren't the Cowboys worth a flyer? Very easy schedule. No, they are not. I don't think the Cowboys are good enough to even coast through the division. Let's put it that way. Not talking through my fanhood as a child. El Yessi, bet Fred has Yordan Alvarez at 15-1. To win AL MVP. For those who have access to Betfred, problem is we don't in Nevada, because even though that book is sitting there at Virgin, they don't have a license, so we can't bet there. J-Rod talking about the that you can parlay futures at certain shops. He goes, Yordan to win MVP, Iga to win the U.S. Open, Charlie Alcaraz to win the U.S. Open, 126-1. Might that be something of interest to you? Ladies and gentlemen, Brady Cannon, kind enough to join us in studio. Co-host of Long Shots, the greatest golf betting show there ever was. How you doing, Brady?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I never got a chance to congratulate you on your Warriors futures ticket.
Yeah. Congrats. Yeah, and yours too.
Thank you. Yours was better than mine. 11-1.
They both paid nicely, though.
They did.
And, you know, what a series that was. I mean, I was talking to my son, and my son is of the generation that, you know, it's LeBron, and you know, I'm the old man, get off my lawn. What about Jordan, right? You know, and we were talking about Steph Curry, and you know, our house, I grew up in the Bay Area, so we're fans of all the Bay Area teams, and he's kind of anti-Warriors, and I'm always like, come on, man, come on, kid, you know, and so we were talking about Steph Curry, and you know, I think this last finals has convinced me, and you know, I think it's been agreed upon for a while that Steph Curry is maybe the best shooter of all time.
All time.
I think this last NBA finals has me thinking he's one of the best players of all time. I think he has graduated into that.
Let's do some sports
category.
Talk radio. Since you insist, Brady, since you twist my arm, let's do some sports talk radio. Top 10 of all time?
I think he's top 15.
I'm going to say top 10.
Yeah. And you could convince me, I'm sure, but his performance was just stellar. What was it, game four when he went for 43 points or whatever? Carried that team on his shoulders.
The one that KD called iconic, yes.
Yes.
I think because he changed the game, right? The phrase that everybody used.
Right.
He changed the game. Now he's the greatest shooter of all time. He changed the game. I think it's very, first of all, I say this now, and I said it during, the most beautiful thing in sports. But in our lifetime, forget about Bill Russell's Celtics, in our lifetime, Jordan's 6, Magic's 5, and I'm sorry, Steph's 4.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. The Celtics ran into the Showtime Lakers, so they had that problem. But I think in this era, when of 4 championships in 8 years, where 2 of the years that you didn't win in that 8-year span, you won 73 games, and the other one, you had 2 catastrophic leg injuries in the finals to 2 of your best players, not named Steph.
Right.
You went to the bottom of the league and rose back from the ashes. I'm sorry. He's top 10 to me. There's some people who have said he's top 5. I won't go that far. But top 10.
I'd have to assemble my top 10 or top 15 and see where he falls, but he's definitely in there for me.
One, two, the 3 that I cannot be talked out of the top 5 are Magic, Jordan, and Kareem.
And what about Bird?
Bird is top 10 for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know about top 5, but I think those 3. Anyway, this was your sports talk radio moment. I think it's a fascinating conversation after the Warriors just won the championship.
Well, it kind of ties into why you and I made the bet, too. As Warriors fans and of people that follow Steph's career and are more in tune with what the Warriors are doing on a year-to-year basis than your casual basketball fan, that's why I made the play on the Warriors before the season started. Because I figured with Klay coming back, possibly James Wiseman coming back, he never really did. But I just felt that they were primed, you know, positioned to make a run with all of these stars coming back into their lineup and the team being healthy again. The team hadn't changed a whole lot from their championship years, and now they had these players coming back from injury, and it worked.
You're 100% right. That's a great point. It was completely in the DNA of why we made that bet.
Mm-hmm.
That we just
it wasn't just a fan play.
That's right.
I wasn't going to the window just to bet the Chicago Cubs like everybody does every year. No, I had reasoning behind this.
No, we for those who are Warriors people, you had a better sense of their greatness over time. People had sort of forgotten about
him
in a certain weird way. Not forgotten about him, but didn't consider them in the same way that we did.
Yep.
And so it's interesting. For sure, and they, of course, got it done. What a great run to the title it was. All right, we have golf this week, and we have our final major of the season next week. We have more than one tournament this week. Are you betting any Barbasol?
No. I am not betting any Barbasol. I rarely bet any of those alternate tour events. You know, the field is obviously much more watered down. Oftentimes it's a course we don't see that often, you know, so there's more unfamiliarity with these events typically. So no, I'm not involved in the Barbasol and dabbled in the Scottish Open for sure. I haven't played the Scottish Open in the past because I rarely ever play European Tour events. But now this is a co-sanctioned event, PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. And we've got 14 of the top 15 players in the world here. So this is absolutely a big boy event this year.
I said 9 of 10 yesterday and you quickly corrected me. 14 of the top 15.
They're both correct.
Yes. John Rahm, 12-1, the short shot. Justin Thomas and Scottie Scheffler, the usual suspects at 14-1. Xander's 18-1. And everybody else led by Matt Fitzpatrick is 20-1 or longer. What are you looking for when you study this course?
Well, the fairways are pretty wide. If the wind doesn't blow and it doesn't look like it's going to or it's not supposed to yet, I think you're going to end up with a pretty low winning score, like in the neighborhood of 20 under par. Now, we know when you're seaside in Scotland, the wind can, you know, the weather can change on a dime, and you could have some days out there where it's 15 to 20 miles an hour. I did see one forecast where they thought maybe Sunday even, I can't remember which day of the week it was, but there could be some pretty brutal wind on one and a half of the rounds anyway. So maybe we won't get all the way to 20 some under par, but I think there are going to be a couple rounds here that are pretty scoreable. I think you need to be pretty long off the tee. There's some very long par fours. There's some very long par threes at this golf course. There's also a drivable par four that, again, could favor the longer hitters. The putting surfaces are pretty wild, and we know this is always true for Open Championships and links golf. The greens are very, very slow, and the reason they do that is because if those winds do kick up and you're on a green that is as fast as Augusta National surfaces or what have you, the ball won't hold still. The wind will blow the ball off the green. So when you're over there playing in Europe, these greens are intentionally made slower. And I've heard on the stimp meter, they're about 10 this week, as opposed to a normal tour event where they're probably 12 or 12 and a half. So, you know, putting is often neutralized. We've seen bad putters win British Opens. Henrik Stenson, Sergio Garcia has not won one, but he's always fared very well in the British Open, and he's not a great putter. So, I mean, Colin Morikawa is not a great putter, and he won on his debut last year at Royal Birkdale. So I don't know if you necessarily have to have a great putter when we're playing over here at the Scottish Open or the Open Championship, but I went with longer hitters, guys that are very good strokes gained tee to green, strokes gained approach, and I believe work around the greens, scrambling, will be a big factor this week as well.
I always ask you this, or tournaments the week before majors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a hard sort of thing to answer. I get it. But I'm curious, do you end up betting fewer guys, less amounts of money because of the nature of the fact that it's the week before a much bigger event and you just don't know how certain golfers are going to treat it? Or is this one of those where the field is so packed that you don't expect any sort of shenanigans? Or the third option is, there's no way you can answer that question anyway, so why bother thinking about it?
Well, you bring up a good point that there are a number of different motivational factors in this field for each individual golfer. Are some of these guys using this as a tune-up for next week? Are some of these guys trying to get in the field for next week? There are still three spots available. The top three finishers inside the top 10 that aren't already qualified for the Open Championship will advance to St. Andrews. And one of those guys is a guy I played, Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler's been playing really good golf. He's not in the Open Championship yet. He seems determined to get in there. He just finished fifth at the little mini J.P. McManus two-day Pro-Am that concluded yesterday. He's been playing pretty darn good golf. He's got a great Open Championship track record. He's won the Scottish Open before. So I did play Ricky Fowler at 160-1, not only based on his current form, but what he's done over here in Europe and the fact that he has that motivational factor to try and get in this field. So to your point, yes, there are a lot of different situations going on here with the Open coming up next week.
All right. Beyond Ricky Fowler, Brady's full breadth of picks for the Scottish Open. See if we can get any added Open Championship bets from him as well. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashing the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets and risk-free tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas? And I know you are. You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards, sports betting's premier loyalty program featuring exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager on the BetMGM app. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. It's Gil Alexander, Nick Kyrgios, up two sets to nothing on Christian Garin, which should be no surprise. He bounced back from his first horrible service game. Rafa Nadal evens things up with Taylor Fritz a set apiece after going to the locker room with the abdominal injury. I'll say it again. Don't know what happens in this match or in this tournament, but Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, and Novak Djokovic, better at tennis than anyone in the world is at anything else. It's incredible to watch.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you there.
What are you best at? What's the best thing you do in life, Brady?
Oh, my gosh. Maybe be a dad?
He's better at tennis than you are a dad. I didn't mean that.
I hear you.
I didn't mean that. Just wanted to prove a point. Okay, so one more thing before we get to your picks. The latest person to go to the LIV Golf Tour, Paul Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise?
My response would be, who cares? Casey, when was the last time he was relevant?
I don't know. I can remember many a tournament here in the last few years where it was like, there's Paul Casey just going right down the middle of the fairway.
I think the last time he won was probably when he went back-to-back at the Valspar a few years ago. But, you know, I mean, he falls into the category I think that a lot of these guys do, like Sergio Garcia, Lee Westwood, Graham McDowell, a lot of these guys that are in the twilight of their career that haven't won in a long time, they're going to go pick up a retirement package and ride off into the sunset. I don't blame him at all, but, you know, people talk about this being such a big threat to the PGA Tour, and I don't want to minimize that, but a lot of the guys that have left, I don't really care about. Mm-hmm. And Patrick Reed, I'm not crying that he's no longer here. The two guys... maybe three guys. Taylor Gooch is surprising because this guy is a young guy who has a big career ahead of him. Dustin Johnson I miss because I really like rooting for him. I love his attitude and his I don't give a you-know-what and the way he just saunters along. And Brooks Koepka is a little bit surprising too, but Brooks and his attitude I don't necessarily miss. So, you know, I think you and I talked about this a little bit earlier in the week. I think with each passing event, my interest for the LIV Tour wanes.
Well, for sure that. I would agree with that. Like, it's just, and I almost look even more askance at those guys, right? I get it. You took your money, $100 million, $125, $150, $200, whatever it was. I get it. You took it. Good for you. But I will say, if you're Phil Mickelson, if you're a DJ, if you're Brooks Koepka, you're walking around on Earth now for the rest of your days, at least how it seems now, with this sort of stigma attached to it. Is that worth it when you already had all the money in the world? We don't know about Phil. You're right. Whatever he was doing off course. Is that worth it in the end? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And again, I go back to DJ. He has a U.S. Open. He has a Masters. He's played a number of Ryder Cups and President's Cups. He's probably accomplished everything he has to. And a guy says, hey, I'm going to give you $150 million to do this for 3 years. Okay, fine. And then I'll retire. The other guys, I think, have a lot more strings attached. You know, because there's guys in this field that have never played a Ryder Cup.
Yep.
And won't be able to. So... DJ's career portfolio is pretty much complete. I don't really blame any of these guys, but like you say, there's a lot left on the table for many of them.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that for now. Blame is a different word, but yes. Okay, Ricky Fowler and beyond. What do you got?
Yeah, you were talking about, you know, motivational factors here, and Ricky certainly has motivation to try and earn one of these spots that's available at the Scottish Open to get into the Open Championship. He really has a great ability to play in wind in these Open Championship or these links-style designs. He's a great wind player. He played college at Oklahoma State and became very accustomed to playing in those conditions there. He has four top 10 finishes, including a win at the Scottish Open. He's also got a really good record in the Open Championship. He's finished 14th and 30th at St. Andrews specifically. He just took fifth at the J.P. McManus. He was 23rd at the PGA Championship, 21st at the Wells Fargo Championship, and I played him at 160-1. I think you could get, and again, it goes back to your point, Gil, about who's using this as a practice round for the Open Championship, who's trying to get in the field, and who's there for other reasons, which there may be two or three, four different layers. You could end up with a fairly random result. And we've seen guys 100-1, 400-1, 75-1. We've seen a lot of long shots win this tournament. And I think it plays into that where John Rahm, Justin Thomas, Scottie Scheffler, all these guys at the top of the board, I don't know if they are dead set on winning this tournament. Sure, if they get off to a good start, they're going to probably push ahead.
Right, but
if they get
opposite,
off to a bad start, they're going to say, all right, well, let's work on our game on Friday and head over to St. Andrews.
That's the thing. I do wonder if this is, just like all tournaments before majors, is that you almost wonder if you wait till after the first round and you're like, okay, well, those guys are donezo, because they're sort of like, if you have a bad first round, you might very well just be like, I'll take the rest of this off.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. The shortest shot I played was Joaquin Niemann, and I feel like this could be a more relaxed atmosphere for him. You know, it was just recently that he was, you know, completely focused on watching his countryman and friend Mito Pereira contend in the PGA Championship. And I think that motivates Joaquin Niemann to try and get to that stage as well. But because this is the week before, he doesn't have that pressure and that spotlight of the major championship that will be the Open next week. So I think maybe he is playing a little bit freer here at the Scottish Open. He, like Ricky Fowler, has the ability to flight the ball low in the wind. If you look at some of his numbers around tour, let's see, he was 24th on tour in strokes gained around the greens. He was 23rd at the PGA Championship. He was 3rd at the Memorial. He's 14th on tour in birdies or better, and he's a long hitter. So I think he checks all the boxes that I'm looking for as far as skill sets this week. Christian Bezuidenhout, I played at 90-1. He was 34th here in 2019 and 44th in 2021. And I think his game is much better now than it was then. He's had three top 15 finishes in his last five starts, including a second place finish last week at the John Deere. And that one's key right there. That got him into the field at the Open next week. So again, I don't think he's going to have the pressure this week of having to get into that field of the Open Championship. He can relax now. And I think, you know, not only in golf, but any walk of life, we're probably better when we're calm and confident and relaxed. And Christian Bezuidenhout is playing great golf right now.
I like that thinking.
Jordan Smith, I played at 105-1, really good current form, 24th at the Irish Open, 8th at the BMW International, and 10th at the Porsche European last month. So I took a stab with him at 105-1. And then my biggest bomb is Callum Tarran of England. Ooh. He is a really big hitter. He just took 31st at the U.S. Open, and he was 6th last week at the John Deere Classic. This guy's really starting to play some good golf. He's an Englishman, so he has that experience of how to play this style of golf. And I got him at 300-1 to win the Scottish Open.
Any head-to-heads?
I didn't play any head-to-heads, and I did dumb down the risk this week because, again, it's a course I'm not as familiar with. It's not a golf tournament I've handicapped year in and year out. This is really probably the first time that I've taken a serious look at it, and that's also why I stayed away from the head-to-heads. The head-to-heads are always my biggest amount of risk, and so I don't want to dive in too deep, you know, knowing less than maybe I do for a traditional PGA Tour event.
Makes sense. Anything added to the Open Championship?
Yeah, I did. Justin Rose.
Oh.
So I have Tiger. We've talked about that.
You have Tiger more than once, right?
I have Tiger at 50, and I have Tiger at 85, and I've seen him at the Westgate this week at 100-1. I'm not going to dive back in. I didn't invest a ton in Tiger, but I've explained I do believe he has a shot here. I played Jordan Spieth at 25-1. I played Danny Willett, who has a great history at the old course at St. Andrews, at 200-1. And then I played Justin Rose at 85-1. Dave Tindall's 10-year trends piece just came out this morning. Mm. Justin Rose makes the list.
Ooh.
He's got a great track record at St. Andrews. He's got a great track record at all the correlated courses I looked at, which you can go check out in Point Spread Weekly in your inbox as we speak here at VSiN.com. I looked at a number of players who have great track records at the correlated courses. Justin Rose is one of them. So I played him at 85-1, and he's been in excellent current form. Had a great tournament at the Canadian Open, and he's played well in the majors this year. And, you know, oftentimes, Gil, you know, the Open Championship goes to an elder statesman, not necessarily a young gun. So some of these guys with more experience might shine next week at St. Andrews.
Thank you, Brady. And you might be a better father than Rafa is at tennis.
I appreciate that.
I'll allow for it. The Lombardi Line is next. Enjoy from VSiN, the sports betting network.